You're listening to Precinct 444, a podcast network from the National Law Enforcement Museum. Today, we're bringing you an episode from Icons, where listeners are introduced to incredible people working within the law enforcement community who have made a profound impact in our world. These one-on-one interviews provide insight into their lives and careers so we can better understand their challenges and recognize their bravery, commitment, and sacrifice.
On today's episode of Icons, we are going to introduce you to a legendary figure in American law enforcement history. Known in his day as the Italian Sherlock Holmes, Joseph Petrosino was an Italian immigrant who became the first Italian-speaking officer in the NYPD and made a significant mark on the policing of organized crime in the early 20th century Manhattan. Though he was assassinated at the height of his career, Petrosino's name would be etched into the annals of law enforcement history. We're going to discuss his biography and his illustrious career today, and in a later episode of Law and Disorder, we are going to examine the investigation into Petrosino's assassination, so make sure you've subscribed to Precinct 444 to be the first to know when that episode drops.
This episode of Icons is brought to you by Off-Duty Management. Off-Duty Management is dedicated to supporting and protecting law enforcement agencies, their officers, and community vendors by offering a fully customizable, centrally administered, no-cost solution that manages all aspects of off-duty programs and keeps agencies in full control, mitigating their risk and liability. You can learn more about them at offdutymanagement.com.
Giuseppe Joseph Petrosino was born in Padula, Italy on August 30, 1860. He and his family immigrated to the United States in 1873 when Petrosino was 13 years old and settled in a Manhattan neighborhood that would one day become Little Italy. Petrosino was intelligent and a self-starter. He soon learned English and, like many immigrant teenagers, went to work to support his family. He and a friend started a newspaper and shoeshine stand near 300 Mulberry Street, conveniently located near the headquarters of the New York Police Department at the time. While the newspaper stand was a great start, the young Petrosino had higher sights toward a brighter future. Petrosino worked a variety of different jobs through his early teenage years, until finally becoming a street cleaner. Interesting enough, street cleaners were employed under the New York Police Department. In the late 1800s, the New York Police Department was a bit different than it is today, and found itself in charge of some additional municipal services outside of traditional policing practices. One of these municipalities was the Sanitation Department, which included street cleaning. Street cleaning was an entry-level job in the Sanitation Department, and while the job may not have been glamorous, for the right kind of individual, especially a self-starting, eager-eyed young immigrant, working as a street cleaner was an opportunity to get one's foot in the door for higher advancement within the New York Police Department. Young Giuseppe Petrosino was able to do just that. His time pushing that three-wheeled cart through the streets of New York City, sweeping grime, litter, and horse manure from the streets, would lead him to a number of promotions, the first being an appointment to take the large boat that hauled the city's trash to be dumped in the Atlantic Ocean. Later, he would be able to set the duties of sanitation aside for a more traditional law enforcement role and break a few barriers in the process. By the time Petrosino was in his early 20s, he had captured the attention of more seasoned law enforcement officers within the New York Police Department, most notably Inspector Alec Clubber Williams, who was regarded as one of the most powerful, feared, and from later discovery, corrupt officers within the NYPD's history. And Petrosino captured his interest. Despite the fact that Petrosino did not meet the physical requirements for an officer of the NYPD, the inspector felt that he would be a good man for the job, and he became the first officer of Italian descent to join the department. At the time, a majority of the New York Police Department's rank and file were Irish-American immigrants, many of whom had come to the United States in the wake of the Irish potato famine, which devastated the island country between 1845 and 1852. But there were other motivations as well, including ongoing religious and political conflict and the opportunity for a better socioeconomic position in the rapidly industrializing United States. And Italian immigrants, like Petrosino and his family, had been trickling into the United States since the colonial period. and Italian immigrants like Petrosino and his family had been trickling into the United States since the colonial period. At that time, they were mostly highly skilled artists and craftsmen who were bringing the art of their Tuscan homeland into the institutions of the New World. But the true rise of Italian immigration to the United States began in the 1880s, only a few years after Petrosino and his family arrived. In 1880, 300,000 Italian immigrants came to the United States through Ellis Island, and in the next decade, that number doubled to 600,000. And by 1920, when immigration from the peninsular country began to dissipate, more than 4 million Italians had immigrated into the United States through Ellis Island, and they represented more than 10% of the nation's foreign-born population. And Italian immigrants came to the United States for a variety of reasons. By the late 1800s, Italy was a unified country, but the nation and its people were still feeling the effects of many decades of internal strife that led to that unification. There was still a great deal of violence, social chaos, and extreme poverty in the country. Italians in the south and mostly rural region of the peninsula, near Sicily, were hit the hardest by this poverty. This was made worse as disease and natural disaster swept through the country, and the still developing government of Italy struggled to have the resources to provide aid to its people. By the 1880s, transatlantic travel had become more and more affordable. Between recruiters to the United States and word of mouth from loved ones who had already crossed the Atlantic, the rapidly industrializing America was the land of opportunity. And this generation of Italian immigrants was different from that generation before. Rather than northern Italian artists and shopkeepers who were expanding their trade, these were southern Italian farmers and laborers who were looking for a steady source of work, and they were willing to do any kind of work. In the old country, many of those who immigrated to the United States had been farmers, a profession that was not feasible in a bustling city like Manhattan, and they now found themselves working in public works projects and even sweatshops. What was also different about this new generation of immigrants was the fact that once they arrived in New York City through Ellis Island, they remained in the city of New York and surrounding pockets of nearby New Jersey, and they created their own immigrant communities that were similar to the type of living that they were doing back in the villages that they left behind. And not every immigrant who came to the United States planned to make this new world their permanent home. Among this wave of immigrants were many single men who would stay in the country for a few years. About 30 to 50% of all the immigrants who came to America from Italy during this wave returned to the old country within 3 to 5 years. But those who did remain in the United States maintained close communication with their remaining family in Italy, and many worked diligently to have enough money to send back home. In 1896, the U.S. Government Commission on Italian Immigration estimated that immigrants sent or brought home between $4 and $30 million each year, and that, quote, the marked increase in the wealth of certain sections of Italy can be traced directly to the money that was earned in the United States. And in 1883, Joseph Petrosino became the first Italian-speaking officer in the NYPD, but he would be far from the last, and this was all in spite of the fact that the NYPD was not always the most welcoming place to Petrosino. At the time of Petrosino's appointment to the NYPD, nearly one quarter of the city of New York's population was Italian, so it would appear that Petrosino's place among the ranks would show that a step was being made to have the city's police department reflect the diverse communities it was sworn to protect. However, there were many among the Italian immigrant community that felt differently. Little Italy at the time was a close-knit but also very cramped community. The neighborhood was very poor, dirty, and overcrowded, with most of its residents living in dilapidated tenement housing. These conditions made Little Italy the perfect place for organized crime to take root and led many of the residents to feel a great amount of distrust for any established authority, including law enforcement. And even though Petrosino was one of their own, there were many who did not appreciate his affiliation with the NYPD. Petrosino quickly gained a reputation as a tough and incorruptible man of the law, and for many, this was an encouraging fact, but for others, it was very unwelcome. Petrosino received a great number of menacing letters during his time on the force that showed their disdain for his profession, and some of these letters were so volatile that he ended up having to relocate to a different part of the neighborhood. However, none of this stopped Petrosino from working in law enforcement, and while his Italian background gave him a disadvantage in the majority Irish department when it came toward advancement, it did help him to better investigate crimes that were occurring right on his doorstep. From an early point in his career, Petrosino committed himself to combating one of the more notorious organized crime organizations that was running Little Italy through extortion plots and violence, a secret society known as the Black Hand. The Black Hand was made up of Italians who committed extortion, typically through menacing letters, that threatened to kidnap children, blow up homes, or even kill fellow Italians if they did not pay a prescribed ransom by a certain time. Letters sent by the Black Hand were often illustrated with images of daggers and black crosses, and the extortionists were successful because they often followed through with their threatened violence if the ransom was not paid. The Black Hand occasionally operated under mob bosses in New York, but the organization itself was not limited to New York City. Syndicates of the Black Hand also operated in Philadelphia, Chicago, New Orleans, San Francisco, and Detroit's Italian-American communities. Petrosino was especially motivated to go after the Black Hand as he felt that their criminal activity ruined the hard-won good reputation that Italian immigrants had built over the decades in Little Italy. And Petrosino was a worthy adversary for the Black Hand and other criminals in Little Italy. One of Petrosino's advantages to fighting crime within Little Italy was his ability to speak Italian. Because of this, criminals in Little Italy soon came to face an enemy who spoke both their language, knew their methods, and could seamlessly infiltrate into their plans. His ability to solve crimes in the Italian community earned Petrosino a promotion to detective sergeant in charge of the NYPD's homicide division in 1895. This promotion was handed down to him directly from future President Teddy Roosevelt, who was the NYPD commissioner at the time and had become a personal friend to Petrosino. If Petrosino was truly to combat the Black Hand and other crime in Little Italy, though, he was going to need some assistance, and he couldn't just have any officers working with him. Since the Black Hand was operating within Little Italy and their crimes were primarily extorting the Italian immigrant population, it meant that the officers working with him to combat this menace would be most effective if they could speak Italian. Better yet, if they were Italian officers and their identities as officers were more unknown to the rest of the community, it was even better. Petrosino requested that a special unit be created within the NYPD that would be known as the Italian Squad. Petrosino's ideal Italian squad in 1904 would have been 20 Italian-speaking detectives, but he was given only 5. While their ranks were not large, the Italian squad was a determined lot. They were not given an office to work from, so their headquarters became Petrosino's apartment. And these officers worked day and night, arresting known members of the Black Hand and stopping extortion plots in their tracks. But as Italian immigration continued to skyrocket over the next few years, the activity of the Black Hand also intensified. Petrosino needed more detectives to keep up with the incidents, and by 1906, he had 40 detectives on the Italian squad. One of the most notable cases that Petrosino worked on with the Italian squad involved a notable Italian-born opera singer named Enrico Caruso. Caruso was a tenor who performed with the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City, and he was being extorted by the Black Hand, who demanded money in exchange for his life. Petrosino, who was an avid patron of the opera, was able to foil this extortion plot and ultimately convince Caruso to support his crusade in taking down the Black Hand. Additionally, in working with the Italian squad, Petrosino and his men were able to infiltrate the organization of notorious Italian-based anarchists that were suspected to be tied to an assassination of King Umberto I in 1900. During this mission, Petrosino uncovered evidence of an assassination plot against President William McKinley that was to take place during his upcoming trip to Buffalo, New York. Petrosino warned the Secret Service of this plan that he had uncovered, but McKinley failed to heed the warning, despite the fact that former Vice President Teddy Roosevelt vouched for his friend's investigative abilities. Ultimately, in Buffalo, New York, President William McKinley was assassinated by Polish-American Leon Czolgosz during his visit to the Pan-American Expedition on September 6th of 1901. But in 1908, Petrosino was once again promoted, this time to lieutenant, and he was appointed as the official leader of this prestigious Italian squad. Petrosino recognized that the organized crime problem was not something that originated in Little Italy itself, and while catching the criminals in the act and arresting them got a criminal off the street, it did not stop the organized crime from happening. The thing about organized crime is that if one man is arrested, there's another one right there to fill his place in the hierarchy. And Petrosino knew that to truly stop the Black Hand, he would have to go to the source, which was in Sicily. And while the Black Hand was operating in American cities, they had very deep roots across the Atlantic in the Old Country. In 1909, Police Commissioner Theodore Bingham feared that the Italian Squad, as it existed, was becoming too well known to continue to be effective against the Black Hand. He envisioned a new secret service of Italian Squad members that were new faces and were virtually unrecognizable to the established members of the Italian-American community and the Black Hand. They would be a half dozen elite detectives whose identities would not be revealed, and they would be led by Petrosino. The idea was met with a great deal of skepticism, and it's not known whether or not he expected this secret service to be more successful than the established Italian Squad, but within a few months, this secret service was made possible through private donations. And it seemed that Bingham's primary goal for this group of officers was very similar to one of Petrosino's goals from the very beginning, to stop the flow of criminals from Italy directly by refusing entry to potential immigrants with criminal records. But as they attempted to enforce this rule, it was discovered that it was a lot more difficult to obtain those prison records than Bingham and Petrosino might have initially thought. Italy's still formative government was not particularly forthcoming of these records. So Bingham gave Petrosino a direct task: travel to Italy and secure the records himself. The detective knew, even before stepping back on the Italian peninsula, that this trip was going to be dangerous. Despite not having stepped foot on Italian soil in decades, Petrosino was well known there, especially by his adversaries. Petrosino had put over 500 Italian men in jail for crimes connected to mafia ties. One such man was Vito Cassioferro, a low-level Black Hand associate who Petrosino had investigated and arrested on suspicion of murder in 1903. Ferro had been acquitted later, and he went back to Sicily, where he ascended to a top rank of the Sicilian mafia. It would be very difficult for Petrosino to complete the task at hand without being noticed by his enemies, and without his enemies knowing what he was doing. American Ambassador to Italy Lloyd Carpenter Grissom expressed concerns directly to Petrosino that he would be recognized in Sicily by, quote, perhaps 1,000 criminals. In fact, historians believe that Petrosino understood this risk prior to leaving for his trip. He had signed power of attorney over to his wife prior to boarding his ship to Italy. This would have allowed her to collect his salary in the event of his death. But in spite of this, Petrosino planned his trip to Palermo in Sicily for this secret mission, which began on February 9, 1909, when he boarded a steamship bound for Italy. And testimony proves that the New York Mafia was aware of Petrosino's place on this ship. When he arrived to the Old Country, Petrosino was recognized multiple times, and then, for unknown reasons, Commissioner Bingham publicly announced Petrosino's presence in Italy. History knows Bingham as someone who was prone for making provocative and regrettable public statements, and unfortunately, his recklessness in this case cost him one of his best detectives. Petrosino knew that he was being followed almost immediately after getting off the ship in Italy. While in Rome, Petrosino became aware that he was being followed and confided in a friend that there was a man following him whom he recognized from New York, and he later observed this man ducking into a telegraph office. He believed that this man had likely alerted his Black Hand Society compatriots in Noto, Sicily, that Petrosino was now in Italy. On March 12th of 1909, Petrosino, having arrived in Palermo, was invited to meet an informant in the city's Piazza Marina to gain information about the mafia. While waiting for the arrival of his informant, Petrosino was shot in the face by two assailants. Witnesses reported that Petrosino was able to fire off one shot in the assassin's direction, but he was bleeding profusely and fell to the ground. It was also reported that an Italian sailor heard the shots and rushed to Petrosino's aid, but unfortunately, it was too late. The news of Petrosino's death devastated the inhabitants of Little Italy and Petrosino's fellow detectives at the New York Police Department. His death sparked calls to action from politicians in newspapers that harsher measures needed to be taken against the Black Hand. And when informed of Petrosino's death, President Theodore Roosevelt stated, quote, "Petrosino was a great man and a good man. I knew him for many years, and he did not know the name of fear. He was a man worthwhile. I regret most sincerely the death of such a man as Joe Petrosino." But the news was no more devastating for anyone than to Petrosino's widow, Adelena, who learned of her husband's death from a reporter. Joseph Petrosino's funeral was held on April 12, 1909, and it was essentially revered as a public holiday in the city of New York. Nearly 250,000 people crowded the streets in mourning. In his book, The Black Hand, The Epic War Between a Brilliant Detective and the Deadliest Secret Society in American History, Stephen Talty writes about Petrosino's funeral, quote, "Never before in the history of New York or any other American city had such a crowd turned out for a man of the class which Petrosino belonged, a humble police lieutenant." Petrosino was buried in Calvary Cemetery in Queens. And Joseph Petrosino may not be a household name, but he is far from forgotten, especially in law enforcement history and for the citizens of Little Italy in Manhattan. Petrosino Park, named after the detective, is located not far from New York's Little Italy, and at its entrance is a plaque that explains the man behind the park's name. The Sons of Italy Lodge in New York's Little Italy is officially known as the Lieutenant Joseph Petrosino Lodge No. 285, which honors both his name and badge number. The NYPD chapter of the Columbia Association, which is the fraternal organization for Italian-American police officers, gives out an annual Lieutenant Joseph Petrosino Man of the Year Award in his honor, and Petrosino's childhood home in Padula, Italy, has been turned into a museum. Additionally, Petrosino's family created the Lieutenant Detective Joseph Petrosino Association in America, which is headquartered in New York, and celebrates exemplary individuals making a difference in the fields of law enforcement, public service, and business. Their work helps to keep Petrosino's legacy and memory alive. We hope that you've enjoyed this special edition of Icons, and if you'd like to hear more Icons episodes and episodes of other shows on the network, be sure to subscribe to Precinct 444 wherever you get your podcasts. And a big thank you to Christopher Mitchell for editing today's episode. We hope to see you again soon here at The Precinct.
We owe a very special thanks to our sponsor for this episode of Icons, Off-Duty Management. Be sure to check them out online at offdutymanagement.com. We hope you found this conversation enlightening and will join us again for another edition of Icons, where we introduce listeners to incredible people working within law enforcement who have had a profound impact on the community. These one-on-one interviews provide insight into their lives and careers so we can better understand their challenges and recognize their bravery, commitment, and sacrifice. The Icon series is not just about contemporary figures in the law enforcement community, but about all of those who have served their communities and the world, from now and in the past. Be sure to tune back in with us for future Icons episodes exclusively on Tuesdays every month to learn about key figures in American law enforcement history. Please subscribe to Precinct 444 on your favorite podcasting platform to stay connected and to receive our latest content as soon as it drops. We would love to hear from you. Send in your questions, comments, and feedback to precinct444@nleomf.org. You can help us make our content even better. The National Law Enforcement Museum is located at 444 East Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., and is dedicated to telling the story of American law enforcement. We expand and enrich the relationship between law enforcement and the community through educational journeys, immersive exhibitions, and insightful programs. Find us online at lawenforcementmuseum.org and stay tuned for more podcast content from Precinct 444. Until next time, stay safe. We'll see you at the precinct. Thank you.